We've talked quite a bit in passing about choirs and choir directors. Because one of the things that happens is you get a lot of feedback. A good cantor, we have had a history in many places of cantor choir directors. And as I said earlier, even if you have a choir, if you listen to recordings, the temptation is to want your choir to sound like a recording of a choir. You never hear a cantor on a recording of a choir. Because the ideal for a choir is this perfect blend. But for our congregational singing, we need cantors. So we have this tradition of having sometimes one person, sometimes two different people that meet that. And those were the people that drove a lot of the musical experimentation, a lot of the use of it, the good sound of it. As you say, you know, like Prof. Calvin, people who had heard a lot of melodies and could go to a tenor and say, try this. Okay? So along with our congregational singing, we've had choirs. And as a couple of people have said, sometimes having a choir removes the congregational singing. And historically, that's one of the reasons that we have not had as many choirs as we could have. As far back as Bishop Takacs in the 1940s, we've heard bishops and clergy worried that when the choir starts singing, everybody shuts up. It doesn't have to be that way, but it has been. And we've had other bishops who just preferred congregational singing. That doesn't mean we couldn't have choirs. It just means we should never have a choir that prevents the people from singing overall. Are there places in the liturgy where you might want to have, are there times when your parish might want to have a choir sing, even if on a regular basis they don't?
When people are going for communion.
Okay, traditionally, and in a Russian Orthodox church, because they only have the communion hymn there, which takes like 30 seconds to sing, they actually came into, they practiced something called a concert. And the choir would pick, you know, like lovely music. But what's not happening if the choir is singing lovely music at communion? We're not singing together. And admittedly, there are times to be silent, but, you know, you can get into a situation where it's me and Jesus at Holy Communion. And there is nothing wrong with a strong Eucharistic piety, but the Eucharist is also what brings us together in the church. And so we probably don't really want to encourage the idea of having mood music so I can say my prayers after communion. Say that for after the service. I mean, that's one possibility to do that. I will say certainly anytime the people are mostly focused on something else is good. But what are some other times when you might want to beautify the service with particularly good singing? Major holy days. Particularly, we've got these paraliturgical hymns. We've got Marian hymns. We've got other things that can be sung before and after the service. There are, obviously, there are choral arrangements of our chant that can be sung. But traditionally, when we sang in Slavonic, often what our choir sang was the best Slavonic music, which for our people meant good Russian music. Okay, or good Ukrainian music, Bortnianski. Gorgeous music, fun music to sing. But you run the risk when you do that of having the choir and everybody else. It's the choir director's job and the priest's job to keep them together. We can't give you rules for that except to say, doesn't mean you can't have a choir. A choir can add a lot of social cohesion. Choir can also add a lot of disagreement and disgruntlement. It's all how it's managed. Okay? Our church choir tradition largely started in about 1830 when a choir director named Konstantin Matajonski came to Uzhgorod and became the choir director of the cathedral. He was actually a Russian revolutionary who was running away from the authorities. And he decided that the Carpathian Mountains were about the best place that nobody was going to find him. But he was an accomplished choir director, and from that point on, the choir, eventually the Harmonia Choir of the cathedral in Uzhgorod, became well-known, won prizes in Hungary, sang beautiful music. Up in the rare books room, we actually have four volumes of all the choir music that they collected in the 1940s that had been written for that choir. It's gorgeous stuff. Very little of it is chant-based. It follows the tradition of writing, you know, beautiful music. Could some of those pieces be used? Maybe. But I'm going to say here, encourage you right now, until we have a stronger harmonized chant tradition, I would say let's stick to that. Mind the sound when you have a good sound of church music to use. Okay? And with that in mind, and all of the church choirs to which, you know, I have a lot of respect for, from St. Mary's Jersey City at one end of the continent to St. Mary's in Van Nuys at the other. Okay, we've had some great choirs. We've also had the chant tradition, and harmonizing those can sometimes be a problem. As we've seen, you know, we've sung some things here that just don't quite work with natural harmony. One of the things that the MCI did a couple of years ago was to produce some harmonized settings. We had a bunch of parishes with choirs saying, you know, we'd like to use the new music, we need a quick start until we figure out what we're going to do. And so Professor Thompson, the director of the program, did a set of music. And if you go out to the publications page on the website, and then you go to, this is the one people missed, where it says, look here. If you click on that, this is where the green book is online, and the Cantor's Companion, and some other things. And underneath that, you see this area called Contributed Materials. And that has things like a sheet with the Glory Now and Ever and all the eight tones, and some stuff for Holy Communion, and this, which I want to point you to. This is a four-part SATB harmonization of the first section of the Green Book, the Divine Liturgy. I've got copies of these to hand out. Actually, maybe if you could. What I'm handing out is a couple of things. Okay. An Akathist. No, this is the top of each set. An Akathist hymn, some music for the Divine Liturgy, and some music for the Presanctified. This is not a complete set. This is a teaser. Partly because I really didn't want to print off 2,500 pages, you know, for the class, as Sister Margaret would kind of be miffed if I ran out next semester's paper supply. So put aside the Akathist hymn for just a second. We'll talk about that in a minute. So this is a set of music in a simple chant-based style. Some people got this music harmonized in thirds with a bass line and some kind of reasonable tenor line. Some people looked at this and said, this is exactly what our parish is singing. This is close to what our parish is singing. We can deal with that. We also got a number of places where parishes said, this isn't our music at all. And we talked to a number of the choir directors and cantors, and in almost every case, there was one basic difference between the parishes that found it very familiar and the ones that didn't. And that's whether you harmonized a third up or a third down. Now, in a lot of basic choral music, when you harmonize a melody for choir style, who is singing the melody? Top voice. Right? Yeah, soprano. And everybody listens for that top voice. Now, in our church, if there's harmony, it's often the top voice, by ear, is going to be the tenor. Okay? And so you've got a tenor, a lower tenor, or a baritone singing the melody, the chant line. And that's a slightly different world experience. This is a complete set of music for our current Divine Liturgy. The Carpatho-Russian Orthodox Diocese has a book for the Divine Liturgy and all the propers in a very similar style. Soprano, melody, and the top line. What does that mean? Well, if you've got a cantor singing with the choir, whose line is the cantor singing? The soprano line. So one of the things that becomes an issue is who's singing in whose range. Okay. Some people have adapted this to all male choirs, and as Nick has pointed out, that is really problematical. Just taking four-part men's and women's music and turning into four-part men's or four-part women, that takes professional skill. It's some different stuff. But this is music out there that is available now. I will say it is not perfect, but one of the things I mentioned a while ago that we might do this talk. I talked to Professor Thompson, and he said, please, if you use this, because this has never been thoroughly used, partly because the cathedral where he was cantor did not have a regular choir. If anyone would care, particularly people among you who have directed choirs, would care to pull this off the website and look at it and circle the parts that you don't like, I would love a year from now to have a very polished offset of music for this. Okay? But it's available now. And also in that, there is a set of music which has been used at the seminary for the pre-sanctified. That's the second set. And this is for three parts men's voices. In both of these sets of music, you will see the same very simple style. The top two voices move in thirds. Occasionally, approaching a cadence or the end of a line, there will be some variation to avoid a clash. The bass line is often following the roots of the chords. If you write out the chords, you'll see the bass line is a support. And that's one reason that the bass line moves up and down a lot more than any of the other voices. Bum, 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 bum. Bass is, if you have a bass who's sung for a while, they can almost just do this at a drop of a hat. Because that's the way their voice part works. Very often in choral music. This music is available. There is also some choirs have also put music, have done music for their own tradition. You run into the whole problem of translation, whether you're moving from Slavonic English or the English translation from 10 years ago to the English translation now. There's some buzzing around here. I think it would be a good idea if parishes that had choirs continued to find ways to employ them that helps our congregational singing. And if these resources help, they're available. If there were a request for additional harmonized music, there are people, multiple people in the Archdiocese, who might be interested in trying to meet that need. And so that's something to think about. The whole question of, if you have singing in your parish, what is it that you don't have in the cantor stand or the choir loft that you would like to have? Either because your parish might come up with it, or somebody else might be willing to share it. So, having said that, I would like you to take a look at the Agapus hymn, which is the first thing here. And I want to tell you a little bit about the history of this setting.
Jeff, before you go into that,
yes.
I'd like to make a comment.
Please.
When Jeff said that a lot of the music has the alto part, a third under the melody.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I said was singing in thirds. Sometimes yeah. It's a third above, sometimes it's a third below. But often you'll have two voices that mostly move together.
If the lower of the two is to be sung by altos, women, mm-hmm. okay, there's a lot of altos in choirs that are really at the low end of the alto range. So if you force them to go too high, you know, and be a third under a soprano, it may be too high for them. So that statement works most, your statement works most when the melody stays relatively low so that a third under can be reached by your current altos. Maybe professional altos could get it.
But not.
But a lot of people who are high altos in regular church choirs end up singing soprano parts. Just like a lot of second tenors end up singing the regular tenor part.
Because somebody says, you're needed on this part.
Yeah, so you almost have to, you know,
right.
Do what's best, choose what's best for your group.
Right. And as part of that, I think you might notice a lot of our music is very stepwise. Okay, it doesn't have a whole lot of leaps. There's actually a pattern here. The music for things like the cherubic hymn, the Holy God, some of these things that are more influenced by the folk music or the local Carpathian music tradition have a lot of leaps in them. The ones that come from the older Znamenī chant tradition, the monastic chant, that tends to be really slowly up and down. Not a lot of jumps, not a big range. Okay. And in fact, if you look at, do I have that one? I have here a book with the Kievan notation, which was used up until the book Shai in 1900. Okay. This is a five-line staff. And on this five-line staff, do is always on the middle line. And you never go up more than about a fourth above that or a fourth below. You always stay on the middle of that staff. No other clefs. So really, by design, the chant is kind of compressed in this range. But as you can see from looking at some of our melodies, some of them go way up and down. And there you have to do something different with the part writing. You can't just assume that people can leap up a fifth and still be in the range. As far as this Akathis Tim, this was originally done at the four special events held in connection with a choir that was singing at the seminary. It used a Russian, or it used a traditional Russian choir setting of this melody, which is called the Plechaev melody. Rejoice, O you through whom joy will shine forth. Rejoice, O you through whom the curse will disappear. Rejoice, O restoration of the fallen Adam. Rejoice, O redemption of the tears of Eve. Stop there. Now, keep going. Rejoice, O peak above the reach of human thought. Okay, good reading. Because if we do this at our parishes, until recently where Uniontown has had an effect, how will people very often sing it? Rejoice, O you through whom joy will shine forth. Rejoice, O you through whom the curse will disappear. Rejoice, O restoration of the fallen Adam. Rejoice, O redemption of the tears of Eve. So that first phrase ends very differently. It has these long-held notes, which if a choir director is mapping out the swell of that sound, can sound magnificent. If you look at the Jordanville Monastery books, it has the same as ours, with the extra notes and the shorter values. Okay, two different traditions. Professor Thompson was asked to use a particular melody and set it. And the real problem came, though, was when they produced the books for Uniontown. Because when they did that, they just took out the soprano. They just took the soprano line. Now imagine this with all of the other notes gone. Suddenly that whole note on Shine just looks unreasonably long. And people said, I don't remember singing this before. This is not at all what I remembered. Furthermore, there were some people, quite a lot of people actually, who thought of the melody as, Rejoice, O you through whom joy will shine forth. Rejoice, O you through whom the curse will... What's happening there?
You're mixing up the harmony with the melody.
Or someone heard that middle line, because remember, often in our settings, the chant line is somewhere in the middle. They heard the alto line, and they think, but that's the melody. Now, what happens when you remove everything but the soprano line? They say, this is completely different. You know, I don't even see the melody that I know here. So by the way this occurred historically, you can end up in a situation where you're really singing practically the same music and people don't recognize it.
I recognize it the last way you sang it. That's exactly the way I learned.
And we have actually, out on the website, there is still this four-part setting. But if you go out and look at the Akathis book that the MCI has right now, it uses our traditional setting with the quarter notes. However, if you go to Uniontown, the sisters have not reprinted the Akathis book from 5 years ago, and so it has a slightly different setting. As a cantor, if you were in charge, you'd have to deal with it. Anybody else just sing along. But I'm saying sometimes how things are harmonized and how things are done and printed can have a big effect on how people sang. For a while, the singing on this dropped off quite a bit. And after about 2 years, it got a lot better. I have a feeling that if they change back to the older melody within the next 2 or 3 years, it will probably come way back. If they wait 4 or 5 years, Who knows? Okay? And recently, actually, they've been singing a different Occhethis hymn at Uniontown. So, you know, those books didn't come into play at all. Yes?
So this Occhethis that you just gave us,
yes.
that's the best way as far as following tradition, right?
No, it's the best. No. This, see, this is precisely it. This is if you go to the Russian Synod Cathedral in if you go to Nyack, New York, big Russian Orthodox church there in the Church Abroad, oh, they will love you for this. They'll say, oh yes, you're one of us, come in and sing. Okay? But this is not the way many of our parishes, at least in Pittsburgh, sang it.
You mentioned Jordanville. Is that the same as what you were saying, Russian Orthodox?
No. Cathedral? See, that's the thing, is the Jordanville Monastery has a more folky setting of this, and they will fight over whether we sing the cathedral version or whether we sing the folky. And, you know, when Jordanville Monastery printed, they just printed one line. Guess which line they printed? Alto line from this. Okay, as the one line, because everyone knows how to harmonize. You sing a third up and you sing a bass line. So these kind of things aren't restricted to our church. Okay. Second, if someone says, I don't like that version, I sing it differently, then you have to say, sing it with me, because sometimes they're just harmonies of each other. I have run into more people who argued over it, and you make them sing it together and say, oh, okay, you just learned a different version. My parish in Endicott, New York, had for years a tenor cantor, a high tenor cantor. And he took tenor harmonies on things that after 10 years, people swore that's how the melody went. And they thought that the melody line at that particular point was a harmony. That's what they got used to. Not only is it not worth fighting over, it can be illuminating to figure these things out, but when you are using choir music, listen to how the... If there's any tradition of something being sung in your parish or nearby parish, listen to it first. And see how it's sung there before you try to figure out your plan.
One of the things you can tell people, that in general, for this Occhethis hymn, if you look at our B Creed in the new book, mm-hmm. that's also the old one that was in the Lefkulik book,
mm-hmm.
It starts, I believe in one God the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth, all things visible and invisible. Starting there is this, mm-hmm. or very close to this.
And you can harmonize it the same
way? Yeah.